Welcome to All Sides with Ann Fisher. State lawmakers yesterday passed legislation that makes Ohio the first state to devolve renewable energy standards. Coming up, we'll hear from some of the stakeholders in the equation of renewable energy standards. Joining us now to talk about the bill, which is now headed to the governor for his promised signature, by the way, is Columbus Dispatch business reporter Dan Guarino. Welcome back to the show, Dan.
Glad to be here, Ann.
Senate Bill 310 has passed. The governor has said he will sign it into law. Among other things, it freezes the current renewable energy standards in Ohio. What does that mean to the typical, let's say, residential consumer?
Well, one of the things that has been difficult for a lot of lawmakers to parse during this debate is they were being told that on one side, it was going to raise rates for a typical consumer, and then someone on the other side of the issue would say it was going to cut your rates, or it was going to basically they were saying, coming to opposite conclusions.
Mm-hmm.
And we're just going to have to see. The big thing that's going to determine what the real effect is going to be is what do the utilities do? Because the utilities have a fair amount of leeway in terms of how they want to operate during this freeze period.
Mm-hmm.
AEP has told me that they are most likely going to continue their programs in some form. So what does that look like? How much does that cost? How much do consumers pay for that? I don't know, and they haven't announced it yet. So it's probably premature at this point to really even know what the effect on customer bills is going to be.
The original renewable energy standards were passed in 2008. Did that bring about increases in our bills?
If you look at an electricity bill for AEP, which serves most of Central Ohio,
right.
There are special charges. There's one for essentially renewable energy programs, and then there's one for energy efficiency programs. So those are the two things that are connected to this 2008 law.
Mm-hmm.
A typical household is paying $4 or $5 a month for this. So if you want to point to those and say that this is, you know, these are onerous costs and you shouldn't have to pay them, that's what you're talking about. Now, if you're a factory, if
right.
you're a steel mill, if you're a those costs add up to a lot, and that's where a lot of the push for this has come from. A lot of the people who oppose this bill would say there are all kinds of other things in the electricity bill that are so much bigger than this. There are new charges that are bigger than this, and those weren't being debated. It was of all the charges in the electricity bill, the only one that was worth debating, they would say, were the green energy ones.
The standards are, like I said, are only a few years old. Why the change of heart in the Ohio General Assembly now? What's the timing of this?
There's a few things that are going on that have led to this push. One is the economy has just changed in a drastic way. So these were passed in 2008.
Before
the recession.
Right.
So at that time, we were looking at steadily increasing electricity demand. So if you're an electricity utility, you see these rules that say you need to do energy efficiency programs to help customers slightly reduce their use. But that's in the context of your expectation that your sales and your demand is going to increase every year. Then we enter this period where demand is dropping. Demand drops, and then when it starts to rise again, it's a tiny little rise where these efficiency rules really begin to hurt. And it isn't so much that they hurt now. It's when you look at when the rules become a little bit more stringent and a little bit harder to meet in the near future, that's when they were just wondering what in the world they were going to do.
You're listening to All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. My guest right now, Dan Guarino, Columbus Dispatch business reporter. He's been covering the Senate Bill 310 controversy through the legislature. It was passed yesterday. It's headed to the governor for his signature, and he has said that he will sign it into the law. Among other things, it most notably freezes the current renewable energy standards in Ohio, which were set to increase. If you have a question or comment, give us a call, 614-292-8513. Coming up, we'll hear from a couple of the stakeholders in this debate, the Sierra Club and the Ohio Chamber of Commerce. So we'll get a couple different points of view that way. There's a philosophical issue here, too. There is a cost to continuing to consume energy the way we do. And some people philosophically believe that we have to change our ways. And others, like Speaker of the House, William Batchelder, he's a Republican from Edina, disagrees. It's a philosophical thing for him. He said, I think some people really believe in this green stuff. That's fine, but somebody's going to have to answer to the public as this additional expense gets added on. So he calls it green stuff. Did it the debate come down to that, where it was a bunch of quote unquote tree huggers versus big business?
The debate was interesting in that there were a whole bunch of kind of groups of stakeholders. There was this kind of hyper skeptical, I wouldn't say anti-green, but basically folks who really doubt that there's much value to these green energy programs. And then you also saw a bunch of businesses in favor of and against this bill. But yes, there is this element in this debate, which is a lot of citizen groups and that are skeptical of wind energy, skeptical of solar energy, that just think this is all a waste of money. And that certainly played a role.
And a lot has changed since 2008, not just the economy, but the makeup of the Ohio General Assembly.
Definitely. And remember, in 2008, we had a Democratic governor. And this bill in 2008 passed overwhelmingly in both chambers. What's happened since then is that a lot of the companies that are primarily the ones that implement this rule, they don't like it. They don't want it, and they want it changed. Some of them probably wouldn't mind if it just all went away, the green energy portion of this 2008 law. So yeah, it's just a whole different world.
Dana in Columbus, you're on the air. Hi, Dana.
I was wondering about the origins of this bill that just passed the legislature. Mm-hmm. Was this written by a state legislator, or was this one of those cookie cutter bills that was created by the American Legislative Exchange Council?
Okay.
And maybe for the benefit of interests outside of Ohio?
Well, that's a good question. Thanks, Dana, for that question. There are things in the bill that we'll be getting to, one being that it doesn't require businesses or utilities, I should say, to purchase energy or green energy from in-state providers. They can go out of state now. And there has been questions about who's behind it. And you've written in a recent article, you called passage of the measure a milestone that could pave the way for similar efforts in at least 12 state houses across the country. So is this part of a larger nationwide effort put forth by the American Legislative Exchange Council or some other group?
There are definitely national organizations that are pushing legislation in multiple states that would
similar legislation.
Pare back. Mm-hmm. Now, this specific bill has some elements that are in some of those bills in other states. Those groups are certainly active in Ohio. A lot of the push for this bill, though, is coming from companies in Ohio, coming from people in Ohio that aren't necessarily getting their marching orders straight from some sort of national organization. I mean, it's as with so many issues that are active in a bunch of different state houses, it's kind of hard to it's difficult to say how much of it is coming from some sort of outside force and how much is. But I think there's a lot of the impetus for this has come from within the state.
Thanks a lot, Dana, for that question. As I said in a recent article, you called the passage a milestone that could pave the way for similar efforts. Have other state houses, have they been watching Ohio?
Because
Ohio doesn't usually lead the pack.
Yes, this is, if for those who support this kind of legislation, this is Ohio's gets a gold star, I guess. And in terms of just the legislative cycle in a lot of other states, it's too late for them to immediately turn around and pass something.
Mm-hmm.
A version of this bill came up last year, which was the beginning of a 2-year legislative cycle. In several other states, they had proposals that that may have passed committee, may have passed a chamber, but didn't become law. So if they're going to be inspired by Ohio and maybe try to do a similar bill because they saw that it passed here, the soonest I would expect that would probably be next year unless they do some sort of like lame duck effort. But most states have shorter legislative sessions. So if I had to guess, I don't think we'll really know until probably about this time next year.
Supporters of the measure as it stands call it a compromise. Where's the compromise? What changed to make it a compromise? Point, we should say, though, that the people who are opposed to the bill don't see much of a compromise in it.
It's basically a compromise between different groups that would like to have seen a reduction in these standards. There were some who wanted to just get rid of the standards, just be done with it.
Okay.
The standards that are all in the books right now that the utilities have already implemented, let's just get rid of all those
requirements. Delete the 2008 legislation.
Yes.
Okay.
And that actually, by the way, would be much more in line with some of the model legislation you've seen from national groups.
Okay.
The actual proposal that you saw that kind of became this proposal initially called for essentially a permanent freeze. This is a two-year freeze. The switch from a permanent freeze in these rules, meaning that they would stay at 2014 levels, you know, forever, to a two-year freeze was because of discussions between legislative leaders and the governor's office. When we talk about a compromise, that's most likely what people are talking about, that because of efforts of the governor's office, it wasn't quite as kind of far-reaching as it would have been otherwise, some would say.
Now, not everybody necessarily was behind it. Not every big company was behind it. A coalition of several big companies, including Whirlpool and Honda, put forth an alternative plan. What did they propose?
They said that, first of all, and there have been several kind of iterations of their mm-hmm. alternative plan.
Okay.
So the most recent one was saying, let's do a one-year freeze, and then also let's reduce the energy efficiency standards, but let's essentially not tinker with what counts under those standards, which gets into some of the more complicated parts of the bill. But they were basically saying that this bill, as written, the one that passed, would just basically kind of end a lot of the energy efficiency economy in the state. And they thought there was a way to reduce the standards without completely getting rid of this industry. That proposal, I wouldn't say it never got a serious hearing. It was voted on. A version of it was voted on the House floor yesterday, and it didn't pass. But there were Republicans who supported it. It was a non-starter, though, with the leadership in the legislature and with the legislators who were the key people behind this bill.
One aspect of the law is that utilities, as I mentioned earlier, no longer have to buy half of their renewable energy in-state. And that's is that a blow or not to the green energy producers in the state of Ohio?
Yes, it's a huge blow. And the argument for that provision was that at some point in the future, a court may find that this is unconstitutional.
To require
in-state. Their supporters of that part of the bill would say that you can point to court decisions or writings by jurists saying that they're skeptical of this, none of which are binding on Ohio. But they're saying there is enough of a gray area here that if we keep this, it may be unconstitutional. Now, for people who oppose that idea, this is just a laugher because the legislature does things that may be unconstitutional
all the time,
you know, three times a week. So mm-hmm. it's but that's what it is. Now, the practical effect of this is because of the in-state requirement, there's demand for these projects in Ohio. There is solar and wind installers can operate in Ohio. You'll see these projects sited in Ohio. If you merely need to get that from projects that are deliverable to Ohio, that you can just send the electricity to Ohio,
mm-hmm.
those projects are less expensive in other states. So what you're going to do then is have the Ohio ratepayer money paying to get power from Pennsylvania or to, and it does reduce the cost and it does make the Ohio producers have to be more price competitive. But throughout this debate, I always thought that that in-state provision was, I'm surprised it didn't turn out to be more of a political hot potato than it was. It was something that I think if you would have gotten rid of that provision, this would have passed more easily.
My guest is Dan Guarino. He is a business reporter for the Columbus Dispatch. He's going to stay with us for the hour. Coming up, we're going to hear from Ohio University's Consortium for Energy Economics and the Environment. Stay with us. We'll be right back. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. Welcome back to All Sides. I'm Ann Fisher. Yesterday, the Ohio House passed a bill that puts a 2-year freeze on renewable energy standards in the state of Ohio. As of now, the future of green energy in the Buckeye State is unknown. Still with us is Dan Guarino, business reporter for the Columbus Dispatch. Joining us now to talk about Ohio's energy future is the director of Ohio University's Consortium for Energy, Economics, and the Environment. Scott Miller, welcome to the show.
Hi, Ann. Thank you for having me.
We were just talking about what it means to the renewable energy industry in Ohio now that the mandated energy standards have been frozen, but more importantly, now that utilities are no longer required to purchase their renewable energy from Ohio producers. What do you see as the future for renewable energy in Ohio, given that?
Well, this freeze is going to put a big freeze on that industry. It's going to be very difficult to see a path forward for installed capacity in this state with solar and wind, fuel cells, and other things. With this freeze, it's going to be a very difficult business to be in for the next couple of years in Ohio.
So individual demand for these kinds of things doesn't really matter. It's the big utility demand is what makes it a go of it.
Yes. It really is. This requirement, the original SB 221 that required the purchase of in-state renewables, was focused primarily on the four publicly traded utilities, AEP, First Energy, DP&L, and Duke. And so they were the large aggregators, the large purchasers, and it was them that those utilities that were required to feed that into their transmission grid.
The region's seen a boom in natural gas production. Is this something that we can look to for affordability going forward?
Well, you know, we're seeing a sea change in the way that we use energy in the United States, and a lot of it has to do with this revolution in natural gas extraction. And the revolution really has only come about in the last 10 years. It's a direct result of the hydraulic fracturing technology. This is a technology that the hydraulic fracturing itself has been around for 60 or 70 years. It was used in the 1940s for the first time on vertical wells, but the real technological advantage here has come with the advent of horizontal drilling, where you can take a drill bit, go down a very deep depth, and turn that bit horizontally and go out for as much as a mile or further from the well pad, and then fracture. So the combination of the hydraulic fracturing and the horizontal drilling has really opened up reserves of natural gas that were previously unattainable. And so with that technology, with the deployment of that technology, we're seeing a tremendous amount of natural gas extraction and oil extraction in the United States. And that is really changing the game, as it were. It's an overused phrase, the game changer, but it really is a game changer in the United States. And Ohio is seeing quite a bit of it. I was just looking online yesterday. We've got 44 different rigs in Ohio working. We've got something close to 1,200 permitted well sites in the state of Ohio for horizontal drilling. This is in an area that is primarily a 17 or 18 county region, from about Trumbull County in eastern Ohio over to Canton, Coshocton, and then down to Marietta. So it's a fairly narrow band that they're drilling in right now, but they're seeing quite a bit of activity in those areas and a lot of natural gas coming out of the ground in Ohio.
It's been called a new lease on life when it comes to energy resources. How far out are they looking as far as the supply goes?
Well, you know, it really depends on who you talk to, and there's a lot of different ways to look at this. These wells are relatively short-lived in duration. They don't produce for a terribly long time, and it's really dependent upon the formation that you're drilling in, the pressures of the formation at depth. and the availability of the resource there. But you're seeing wells that reach productive life, the end of their productive life in just a couple of years. Collectively, you know, the way to hedge against that, you know, from the industry's perspective, is to drill a lot of wells. And so that's why we're seeing this real rush in eastern Ohio and in other places around the United States to drill a lot of wells. And they're producing, as I say, a lot of natural gas, and they're constantly trying to stay ahead of the curve to try to push that supply out there because of the relatively short duration of the wells themselves.
You're listening to All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. I'm talking with Scott Miller. He's the director of Ohio University's Consortium for Energy, Economics, and the Environment. If you have a question or comment, you can give us a call, 614-292-8513, or you can email us at allsides@wosu.org. We have an email from Robert, and it goes back to Senate Bill 310, which passed the legislature yesterday and now is headed to the governor's desk for his signature, which he has promised he will give. The email from Robert says, why is a freeze needed? Why couldn't there be a study conducted to weigh the various sides being discussed today and try to get to some type of factual agreement and then recommend how to change the existing 2008 law? Dan Guarino?
Well, this bill includes a study. It was originally going to be a study with a bunch of industry experts. It is now a study with a bunch of legislators.
Who are experts?
I don't know if they're experts, but I mean, there's some legislators who are, you know, well-versed in some of this stuff. So during this two-year freeze, there will be a study. People who wanted to see these standards go unchanged, who didn't want to see a freeze, said exactly what Robert was saying, which is, why can't you just do a study without the freeze? It was a point of debate, and of course the legislature decided to.
What will they be studying?
There are specific instructions on what they're supposed to be studying. When you look at the instructions, it's framed in such a way where, kind of looking at the value of mandates, I believe it's called the Mandate Study Committee. Within this debate of this issue, the word mandate is oftentimes, when you see the word mandate popping up, you know you're talking to an opponent. When you see the words, there are other words that supporters will use. They're going to be studying a variety of issues about the costs of these rules. And whether they can put together anything that would make further changes, I don't know. As we saw recently, over the last couple months, it's very difficult to pass anything when you get all of these energy companies involved. And it's just it's complicated, and it's very difficult to pass.
Scott Miller, with that provision that says utilities no longer have to buy half of the renewable energy in the state, what is your sense about what that does to energy innovation going forward in Ohio? Is this a setback on that, or will companies still work here at it or go somewhere else?
My sense is that if you were in this industry, you're probably going to look for states that have policies that are more conducive to adopting your technology. It's very difficult to build a business and to find a market and to find a market niche, period, in any business. But when you're fighting a headwind like this legislation, it's going to be even more difficult. And so I think that it puts a really will have a chilling effect on the attraction and the expansion of businesses, entrepreneurs, innovators in this space who want to locate, who want to build their business in Ohio.
Dan Guarino, as far as you're covering this part of the business world, what is your sense about that?
I think it's safe to say that if you're a renewable energy company or you are an energy efficiency services company, you're probably not going to grow, and you may shrink over the next couple of years. You may shrink a lot, or maybe even cease to operate. The question is, will the changes in the rules lead other companies to maybe expand? Like, kind of, what's the net change? You will find people on all sides of this issue kind of talking about coming up with all kinds of different assessments of what that might be. If you're a big manufacturer, you're going to see some aspects of your costs go down because of this. Will that lead to more hiring? Will that lead to a company deciding to move here? I don't know. But there are definitely winners and losers in terms of businesses that will be more able to potentially expand and those that will have a hard time.
I think, again, if I could just say one thing, I mean, that the one thing about that is that uncertainty, business hates uncertainty. And what we have right now is an uncertain future for Ohio's energy markets. And that just that doesn't help in terms of innovation and technology development.
Over the past few years, Ohio's seen several coal plants close. What about coal energy in Ohio? How does that play into the equation, Scott Miller?
Yeah, so coal is definitely on a decline in Ohio, and this is not, you know, Ohio. But the important thing to think about when you talk about all of these energy markets, especially commodity-based energy markets, coal, oil, natural gas, and so on and so forth, is that Ohio is not isolated. There is really no energy market in Ohio per se. It's a national, it's an international, it's a global market. And what we're seeing in the United States is an overall trend away from coal. There's a couple of reasons for that. One is that a lot of the plants that we see in Ohio are approaching the end of their useful life. A lot of these plants were built in the 1950s and 60s and are getting to a point where they are hard to operate. They're cash cows for the utilities. They are making a lot of money because they are paid off. But they are hard to operate going forward. The second reason that coal is increasingly looking that the coal market is looking increasingly dire is that there are stringent environmental regulations coming down from the feds that are requiring mercury control technologies. There's a new rule coming out next week that will regulate existing power plants as new power plants, and so they will have to get permits to operate like they were a new power plant, and a lot of these power plants are not going to be able to achieve those technologies. And so the forecast going forward is to close a lot of coal-fired power plants going forward. In fact, Ohio is in what's called the PJM service territory. It's our interstate service transmission operator. The Pennsylvania, Jersey, Maryland, and Ohio is in there. PJM is forecasting 26,000 megawatts of coal-fired power plant retirements in the next 3 years. 6,500 of those, 6,500 megawatts are in Ohio alone. And so the question really is going forward, that is baseload generation. That's electricity that operates 24/7, 365. It's the kind of electricity that we all enjoy. When we flip on the lights at night, in the middle of the night to go to the refrigerator, we want that electricity to be there. Mm-hmm. And the question is going forward, what is that going to be replaced with? Renewables, as we all know, are intermittent. They don't operate. The solar panels don't operate at night. Mm-hmm. Wind turbines don't produce electricity when the wind is not blowing. And so what you're looking for is a replacement for baseload generation. And those primarily will come from two places, nuclear, which we really can't have a discussion about in the United States. We haven't had any really serious discussion about nuclear in 30 years, and probably natural gas. And natural gas, this revolution mm-hmm. in hydraulic fracturing and gas extraction has come along at exactly the right time for the power industry. And so we're probably going to see a move towards gas. In fact, PJM is forecasting that gas will supplant coal in construction of new facilities going forward in the next 5 years. So they're seeing a lot of growth in the gas industry in the PJM service territory.
It'll supplant it, meaning we won't notice a change in the middle of the night when we get up to go to the refrigerator?
Well, this is the question going forward. I mean, we want to make sure that, you know, that the power industry is constantly trying to balance and forecast what our future need is with what they can supply, and that supply. That's called, you know, they look at these things and they call them reserve margins. Basically, what's the maximum amount that Ohio is going to need this year? And that's basically what they generate towards. They generate towards the maximum amount that they're going to need to supply. And so they're trying to balance that going forward. You know, some of these discussions, all of these discussions that we're having here about natural gas and coal and renewables, this is they're looking at their full generation portfolio and trying to figure out how they can balance our needs with their supply. And that's the goal, is to make sure that there's an uninterruptible supply of electricity at a cost that we can all afford, that's not going to destroy the economy and so on and so forth. So that's all these discussions that you're having today are very important discussions, and important discussions for your listeners to take into consideration going forward.
When you talk about that uninterrupted at a price we can afford, it sounds sort of like utopia. Is there at some point a place where we're going to have to give, pay more, have less, something?
Probably, yes. And that's really the important question, is trying to figure out how we can get reliable, cost-effective electric transmission to our homes and into our businesses to make sure that we're not seeing an interruption in our economy. And those are all the kinds of conversations. Those are the conversations that have been occurring in the State House. Those are the conversations that are occurring in the control room and PJM service territory and in the federal government as well. We're trying to balance all of that and trying to make sure that, going forward, that things try not to change as much. But we are going to see, we are seeing a massive change behind the scenes in our energy systems, and things will probably change. We may see increased costs going forward, and those are things that we will have to try to plan for. And as an academic institution, this is not just an academic discussion for me. We very much want to make sure I'm a ratepayer as well as everybody else, and I want to make sure that my electricity bills aren't going up any more than anybody else's. But we're going to see changes, and the changes are going to cost money. There is no free lunch going forward.
Well, Scott Miller, thanks for joining us today to talk about it.
Yes, you're welcome.
Scott Miller, he's director of Ohio University's Consortium for Energy, Economics, and the Environment. Coming up, we're going to hear from the Ohio Chamber of Commerce and Sierra Club's Ohio chapter. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. Welcome back to All Sides. I'm Ann Fisher. A controversial energy bill passed in the Ohio House yesterday afternoon and now awaits the governor's signature for enactment. When the governor signs it, as he has promised that he will, Ohio's renewable energy mandates would be frozen for 2 years. Opponents say the bill comes just at a time when Ohio is making progress on renewable energy, and Senate Bill 310 would turn back the clock.
But now, just as our comeback is gaining steam, our state is trying to pass a law that will shut down new energy job growth and send us back to the Rust Belt.
That's a scary thought. Still with us is Dan Guarino, business reporter for the Columbus Dispatch. Joining us now is director of Sierra Club's Ohio chapter, Jennifer Miller. Jennifer, welcome.
Thank you.
And also with us is the vice president of government affairs for the Ohio Chamber of Commerce, Keith Lake. Keith, welcome to the show.
Thank you. Good morning.
Keith, you've written that the current energy mandates are too costly for Ohio. Can you go into that a little bit more and tell us what were the costs and whether or not they had been expected?
Yeah, well, I'm not sure that we know whether or not they were expected or not. But what we do know is that the energy mandates that Ohio currently has have had a direct economic impact on all of Ohio's ratepayers, and that would include the manufacturers and businesses that we represent at the Ohio Chamber of Commerce, as well as all Ohio electricity customers. Ohioans have already paid more than a billion dollars in compliance costs with the energy efficiency mandate alone. And with the mandates set to continue to rise going forward, we're concerned that the compliance costs will only continue to rise as well.
So they're frozen at what level now?
The renewable energies will be frozen at 2.5%, and the energy efficiency mandate level is at 4.2%, on its way to the goal of 22%.
It's frozen for 2 years. there's going to be a study group. What is that group going to study, or what should it be looking at, in your opinion?
Well, there are a number of things in the bill that specify exactly what the study committee is supposed to look at. But the things that we believe are most prudent for them to look at are the cost-benefit analysis of the mandates themselves, whether or not we actually are seeing any true benefit as compared to the costs of those mandates, and to determine, you know, from a scientific standpoint, what is the best approach for how we measure compliance and for how we measure the savings and the cost benefit going forward.
There's a school of thought that it's pay me now or pay me later. And if the mandates are eliminated that require utilities to buy in-state renewable sources of energy, that those sources will go away, go somewhere else to develop and innovate, and Ohio will be left high and dry, or any state that adopts this approach. What about the future and renewable energy and the development of it?
Well, the good thing is that Ohio's mandates aren't going away right now. We're going to study them for 2 years, and the legislature will make a determination at that point in time whether or not the mandates, both the renewable and the electric usage reduction mandates, should go away, should be adjusted, should be preserved at the levels that is already in the revised code. So, you know, they're not going away in the short term.
Right. And another point that Scott Miller made from Ohio University, that business hates
uncertainty.
Uncertainty. Thanks, Dan Guarino. Hates uncertainty. Certainly, the Chamber of Commerce is sensitive to that idea.
Yeah, absolutely. All of our members appreciate and expect that the government will not make the conditions worse for them by creating instability and uncertainty. But I think in this case, what we've said with Senate Bill 310 is the certainty is we're still going to have mandates. They're going to be at this set level for 2 more years. And then if the legislature acts, they may change. But if they don't act, we're going to continue going forward.
Jennifer Miller, the Sierra Club's argument was that this bill was pro-industry. But it does, as Keith Lake just mentioned, there was a $1 billion in compliance costs since 2008 for ratepayers like you and me.
So we are engaged at the Public Utility Commission, and we have been watching these cases. And actually, the utilities' filings all show that these are saving money. So in their own words—
How do they save money?
Well, energy efficiency especially. Mm-hmm. It's the only technology that we can invest in that saves more energy and saves more money than it costs. So these programs are required to show that they save money, and they have done that. Every dollar invested in energy efficiency saves at least three in the state of Ohio.
And we're talking about saving the ratepayer.
Yes, absolutely. And in addition, we've seen that renewables are also lowering wholesale prices. So if you look at the data from the Public Utilities Commission, not from other independent studies, if you look at the data from the Public Utilities Commission and you look at the data from PJM, which Scott Miller from OU had mentioned earlier, which oversees the grid that Ohio is a part of, you will see that wholesale energy prices have reduced because of energy efficiency and renewable energy.
Dan Guarino, is this what you meant earlier on in the program when you said they both come to the argument with different sets of facts?
And yes, and what you're seeing there is a situation in which both sides are correct. When you talk about $1 billion in costs, yes, there's $1 billion in costs on utility bills. When you talk about the benefits, yes, if you look at the energy savings for ratepayers from these programs, they are far in excess of $1 billion. So it's you're just dealing with kind of what sets of data you wanna be talking about.
Keith Lake, what about that the energy efficiency savings reach far beyond the cost to the ratepayer?
Well, and what we've heard a lot in this debate is these reports that the utilities are required to file with the PUCO and how those demonstrate savings. But what are those reports? It is a report that they are a specific formula that the utilities are required to use to determine the cost benefit of these mandates. And what we know is that we know what the cost is. I mean, that's not debatable. We know how much these things have cost. So how do they determine the savings at which they compare the costs against? Well, what they are required to do under this specific test that they use is to make assumptions about potential benefits over the long term and compare that against the actual costs today.
Jennifer, you're shaking your head.
Yeah. So there are thousands and thousands of pages of documents that review these programs before the Public Utility Commission. Those are evaluated by the utilities, also by the Public Utility Commission itself, also by a third party evaluator. So someone who's independent, who just looks at these numbers. And we know so far that our energy efficiency programs and even our renewables programs have saved more money than they have cost. And that's from significant research that has been done by many different parties. And that's why you have, you know, folks like the Ohio Consumers Council and the NAACP and many, many churches and faith leaders and even many, many others that really look at this from the consumer perspective that are concerned that Senate Bill 310 will mean immediate increase in costs for customers. And I just want to mention that the proponents of this bill continue to want to discuss how the energy market has changed since this bill was passed. But the fact of the matter is that this piece of legislation was actually reauthorized by this General Assembly and Governor Kasich just 2 years ago in 2012. It reauthorized it, it updated it. And in fact, when Kasich signed that piece of legislation, he said at the signing, this legislation will last 100 years. Very little has changed in our energy market since 2012. In fact, the only thing that's changed in our energy market is that gas prices are double and renewables cost less.
Tangarino, what about that when Governor Kasich said that a couple years ago?
So the governor, shortly after he took office, had an energy conference in which lots of big names from the energy world came to Ohio State. They talked about various energy issues. The governor's office spent a fair amount of time after that putting together several recommendations based on some of the things that were discussed there. And that led to this bill that she was discussing. That did make changes to that 2008 law. And the governor at that time was talking about support for renewables and was talking about support for energy efficiency and is still talking about. I mean, it isn't necessarily saying that we're going to abandon all of these things.
But if they can't afford to stay here because there isn't the demand that they need to do their job, to innovate in the way that they need to, that's the same as what?
That is what people who wanted to see this bill not pass would say, and that's what a lot of companies would say. Passing this bill so shortly after passing this other bill that dealt with some of the same issues seems a bit counterproductive. Is what they would tell you. People on the other side of the issue would say that there were just lingering issues that had not been dealt with and that needed to be dealt with at some point. It was either you deal with it now or you deal with it next year. And there's some of the cost issues that that the businesses have raised.
When you talk about people paying higher rates right away because of the energy efficiency standards, Jennifer, say I had my house, I paid the $50 to whoever to have my house, someone came in, or my factory, someone came in and did an energy efficiency study, and I put in the new windows and I got the new air conditioning filters or whatever they told me to do. That's not going to go away. I'm not going to be paying higher rates. I'm still going to enjoy that. Anyone who's participated in that, right? That's not what you're talking about.
Correct. So, okay. And in fact, that's why estimates for efficiency, in terms of the savings, we've already seen the efficiency programs, we've seen about $500 million in cost, but we've seen $1 billion in savings. That will eventually be about $4 billion in savings. That $1 billion is already proven, counted. But you're right. Those savings will continue as those technologies continue. But there's another issue. It's real basic economics. The more demand you have, the more price, right? Mm-hmm. The price goes up with demand. So if we have more demand because we've killed our efficiency programs, and this is not an innocuous freeze, this does kill these for 2 years. If we do that, our prices will immediately go up because Ohio will need to buy more energy on the open market. Energy efficiency lowers prices for everyone, whether they participate in a program like you did or not.
Keith Lake, what about that?
Well, I think what we have to keep in mind here is that what the proponents of doing nothing to change our energy efficiency mandates and our renewable mandates would say are trying to make the argument is that reductions in the cost of the wholesale electricity market will flow down to retail savings to the customers. Mm-hmm. First of all, the data doesn't support that. Wholesale market prices for electricity remain relatively stable since this bill was passed back in 2008. Retail prices have gone up. We have not seen a reduction at all in retail electricity prices. Secondly, to the extent that there are any savings in the wholesale marketplace, we are part of, Ohio is part of an integrated 13-state market, the PJM. So to the extent that there are those savings, 80% of the savings that are generated by Ohio's mandates flow to customers either outside of Ohio or to customers inside of Ohio who do not derive their electricity from the four investor-owned utilities who are required to implement these mandates. And so you have Ohio manufacturers, Ohio businesses, Ohioans who are essentially being charged a rider on their monthly electricity bill to pay for these energy efficiency programs, with the savings going to subsidize folks outside of Ohio, many of whom may be competitors in the marketplace against them.
You're listening to All Sides with Dan Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. Jennifer Miller?
Yeah, thank you. So first off, retail rates have gone up for electricity, but it is wrong to assign that to energy efficiency and renewables. And I actually wish our pals from the Ohio Manufacturing Association were here, because they did studies that show that Ohio's current efficiency law is working and is saving money.
And they opposed Senate Bill 310.
Yes, they did. A lot of businesses opposed Senate Bill 310. So we should make sure that we avoid looking at this as an environment versus economic benefit dialogue, because it's not that. Significant numbers of business interests, the small business majority, Honda, Ohio Manufacturing Association, many others actually oppose this. But, you know, Ann, you've worked at the State House. You've covered the State House, as has Dan, and you know how this works. So electric utilities, coal, oil, gas, a lot of the largest manufacturers, they're giving millions each year to state politicians. And wind and solar and efficiency companies can't compete with that. And so 310 and the decision to dismantle efficiency and renewables is about green, but it's not about green energy.
Well,
it's about cash.
I get the competition and the cash issue, but what about the coalition of companies, the Honda, Whirlpool, Honeywell coalition? Those are pretty big companies, too. I was wondering, Keith Lake, those are big companies. They're obvious. They would normally fall under the umbrella of the Ohio Chamber of Commerce, I would imagine. Where's the disconnect?
Sure. And many of those companies are good Ohio Chamber members.
Right.
And, you know, we have a difference of opinion on this particular issue. Mm-hmm. Our concern is primarily with the effect of the energy efficiency mandate, the rider that is charged every ratepayer in the state of Ohio to comply, you know, so that we can comply with the mandates under Ohio law. You know,
that's one of the $4 or $5 a month.
Well, $4 or $5 a month, perhaps
for
a residential
right.
ratepayer. Yes, it's obviously much higher for businesses, particularly manufacturers, who are consuming significantly greater amounts of electricity on a monthly basis. Many of those manufacturers, I know from having talked to those in my membership, they're not even aware, many of them, that we even have a requirement in the state law that we achieve these energy efficiency savings. They don't know that they're paying a rider on their bill every month to fund them, and they certainly don't know how much that rider is. And so, you know, one of the things that beyond the freeze that Senate Bill 310 does is it provides some transparency so that everyone will actually know what that is. But, you know, with respect to the mandates and to your original question, Anne, you know, what I think this shows is that the mandates have distorted the marketplace in the state of Ohio.
Keith Lake, thanks for joining us today. We have a lot to talk about over the next couple years, I imagine. Hope you'll join us again.
Thank you.
Keith Lake, he's Vice President of Government Affairs for the Ohio Chamber of Commerce, and Jennifer Miller, Director of Sierra Club's Ohio Chapter. Thanks to you as well, Jennifer.
Thank you.
And also Dan Guarino, Columbus Dispatch Business Reporter. Thanks for joining us for the hour, Dan.
Thank you.
Thanks to everybody for listening. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News.